Welcome back to Horse First. If you've been riding along this season, you'll know by now that this is not a show or a podcast about shortcuts or shiny answers. It's about mud on your boots, honesty. It's about hay in your pocket, reality. It's about looking a little closer at what's happening with the horse in front of us, even when the horse world would rather just keep things moving forward. Mid-season is where the deeper work starts to show, the easier stories fall away, and what's left is the real stuff. The habits we inherited, the pressures we didn't notice, the moments where slowing down is the most skilled thing we can do. So, if you've found yourself pausing more, listening harder, and questioning what used to feel normal, you're on the right track. I'm Lockie Phillips. This is Horse First. Let's keep going. The horse world has a bit of a teaching problem, and this podcast is about attempting to name it, name the thing that many of us feel like we need to tiptoe around. That the horse world has a teaching problem. Not necessarily always a horse problem, not necessarily a technical competence problem with horses, but a teaching problem. And I think it's one of the main reasons people feel stuck, anxious, dependent, or quietly ashamed in equestrian environments that claim to be supportive. And let's be clear that this is not about every instructor. There are extraordinary teachers in the horse world. But I've noticed a culture-wide pattern that's just too common for me to ignore anymore. Instruction that disempowers people, instruction that gatekeeps unnecessarily, and instruction that keeps students small. And when teaching becomes about control instead of learning, horses pay for that too, because confused, anxious people don't create safe training environments. So today we're going to talk about toxic teaching dynamics in horse culture, what they might look like in real life, and what we can decide to do instead. So the first bit I want to talk about is how the industry, the horse world, tends to reward dependence. Let's start with an uncomfortable truth. I know, very off-brand, right? But let's start with an uncomfortable truth that a lot of horse instruction is built on dependency. Not always intentionally, but there's a structure there. It's structurally dependent, meaning that many people will simply walk into this cultural pattern, whether it was their intention or not. If a student becomes truly competent, they need fewer lessons. If they become confident, they ask harder questions. If they become literate, they stop outsourcing all authority. And that can threaten insecure teaching systems. So instead of education, you get performative dependency. The student is trained to comply to the trainer, but not necessarily understand. And often the same thing is done to the horses too. Let's use a practical example. A rider asks their instructor, "Why does my horse rush the canter transition?" And the answer is, "Just ride better, more leg, don't overthink." No explanation, no skill building, just a vague command that keeps the student reliant. And that's not teaching. That's control dressed up as expertise. There's another aspect I want to discuss. The phrase, quote, "You're not a trainer," end quote. That is a silencing phrase. And it's one of the most common disempowering lines in horse culture. To say to a student, "You're not a trainer." It gets used to shut down. It means, don't question me, don't interpret, don't think for yourself, don't be creative, leave it to me, the professional. But here's the problem. If you own a horse, you are in training. If you own a horse and they are interacting with you, you are training them. Every interaction teaches something. The question isn't whether you're a trainer for the public. The question is not whether other people pay you for instruction. The question is whether you're being given the literacy to do it well. Another practical example. A horse pins their ears when being girthed up and saddled. A student notices and said, "I think my horse is uncomfortable or in pain." And the instructor responds, "Don't anthropomorphize. You're not experienced enough to read that. You're not a trainer." That's not protecting the horse, that's protecting hierarchy. And listen, there is a time and a place where students need to learn that they are not experienced to interpret that correctly. But in that situation, a trainer could instead say, "I hear that. What did you see? What did you observe? Let's label what you observed and let's see what we can interpret together. Let's understand what we are noticing," rather than shutting the observation down. That's protecting hierarchy. Good teaching would say, "Great noticing. Let's explore what that might mean," right? Gatekeeping information is not expertise, right? I'm not speaking about trainers who reserve the right to retain their proprietary information for paying clients. That's not gatekeeping. That's sound business practice and protecting your intellectual property. Gatekeeping is something different. In healthy education, knowledge is shared. In toxic instruction, knowledge is hoarded. So, for example, someone who has enormous amounts of knowledge but refuses to share most of it with their student body, or when they share it, they do their very best to share it with one or two people only. Some instructors build authority by deliberately keeping things mysterious. They say, "It's just feel," or "You'll understand one day," or "Don't worry about that yet." I'm not speaking about creating a pace to someone's learning, because not all information needs to be shared with a student at one time. Students can only take in as much as they can take in, and it is the role of a good instructor to pace the incoming information, to deal out or not spoon feed, but titrate exposure to information and create levels to the learning. That's not gatekeeping, that's just threshold management. But when it becomes a fog that keeps students permanently unsure, that's when it becomes gatekeeping. Another practical example. Let's say a student asks about pressure and release and the timing around it. A competent teacher can explain it directly in the language that that student can understand, particularly if they have a good relationship to that student. They should have figured out how to communicate with that student in particular. But they say, for example, "When the horse tries, the pressure stops. That's how learning happens." Let's just keep it really simple. A gatekeeping teacher would say, "It's complicated. Just do what I say." That's not pedagogy. That's dependency maintenance. That's maintaining dependency. So the other element I'd like to discuss is how the horse world is, well, obviously unregulated. And I don't necessarily think that's a bad thing. I think that creates creativity and opportunity to people who wouldn't have access to proper channels. However, teachers without pedagogy behind them create harm. They can create harm, not all of them. Here's another truth. Being good with horses does not automatically make you good at teaching people. Teaching adults is a skill. Teaching children is a skill. And teaching horses is a skill. And those things don't always cohabitate. Teaching adults, because that's what I really focus on doing, I believe it requires emotional regulation, communication, structure, psychological safety, humor, and respect for learner autonomy. Horse instruction, horse world instruction, often has, frankly, none of that in the training as a requirement. So instead, you will get instructors who shame students for not knowing, use intimidation as motivation, take questions personally, and treat discomfort as weakness. That's not rigor. That's not pedagogy. That's emotional immaturity from a position of authority. That's someone in a position of authority demonstrating emotional immaturity. The horses absorb the fallout and the clients absorb the fallout because anxious students ride tense. Anxious people handle horses less competently, and that creates a cycle of dependency maintenance, and it just keeps going round and round. Students who feel shamed freeze, and confused students will often escalate pressure on themselves and their horses indiscriminately. Which brings me to talk about how students should not take care of teachers. This is where I share a very, very personal example. I once had a student say to me, "I want you to be happy that you chose me as a student. Can we hear that?" Now, I am lucky and grateful and humbled, frankly, to be in a position right now, won't be forever, right now, when we're at the end of the calendar year, I sit down, or sat down as I did last year, with a 75-page PDF document of applications from people who would like to be students of me and my team. And we sat down and looked very carefully and conscientiously at these applications and drafted groups that we call mentorship groups. My mentorship groups are 12-month containers where I focus on supporting, guiding, teaching, and getting to know these people across a 12-month period. So I am in a position where I choose my students. And one of these people that I chose said, "I want you to be happy that you chose me as a student." This sentence told me everything about what we needed to do first together as a student and a teacher. Because this student honestly let me know after some safety buildings and some gentle coaxing, because I could feel that there was something underneath the surface that was blocking us from moving forward in a healthy way. So sort of coaxed that sentence out until they felt safe enough to say it. And what that sentence says, "I want you to be happy that you chose me as a student," that's a student trying to manage my emotions. And my response was immediately, "I do not need you to take care of my feelings." And then I said, this might sound harsh, but this is how I am. I'm kind-hearted, but I'm not nice. I said, "I do not need you to take care of my feelings. I have a mother. I was raised, and she was fantastic. I have friends. I have mental health counseling when I need it, and I am well supported in my life. I do not need people who are paying me for coaching to take care of my feelings. My job is to provide you a service." Because I think adults learn best when they feel safe and not when they feel auditioned, even and especially in scenarios when I am choosing students. And I'm choosing students because it is simply the best way to manage my time. There are too many people right now and not enough time to reach them all. So I have to be discerning, where am I going to spend my time and my energy to reach the maximum possible positive impact for the horse world and for communities that are asking me for assistance. That's discernment, and that's time management, and that's not auditioning people or trying to exclude people. And I do not need students feeling like they must earn my emotional approval. I say to them at the top of the year, "I looked at names and I said yes to you, and everything else we do this year comes after that." I do not believe good instructors require any emotional caretaking from their student body. They provide steadiness. We create room. We create a container for students to grow beyond us. That is the job. That is the job. To allow our students to grow beyond us, not to keep them underneath us. So here's the solution. If you believe you are in a toxic power dynamic with your instructor, here's a solution I'd like you all to consider, and allow me not to mince words and say it plainly. Stop paying for people who make you smaller. Stop paying for disempowerment. Stop paying people who won't explain. and stop paying people who won't explain why they won't explain. For example, there are several things that I won't explain right now, but I will tell you why I won't explain those right now. I say we need to focus on this, but not that. That's a few steps ahead, or that's tangential, that's ancillary to what we are focusing on in this moment. Let's stay focused on this, and that can lead to this other discussion later. So stop paying people who won't explain, period. And stop paying people who punish your questions. Stop paying people who keep the system mystical so that you stay dependent. Let us find instructors who want you to understand, not obey, who welcome questions without. Welcome questions while still making sure there is space for you to think for yourself. And even demand that you think for yourself. Find instructors who can explain learning clearly. Find instructors who don't use shame as a tool. Find instructors who take care of their own nervous system and mental and physical health. And find instructors who create psychological safety for adults and don't step into parameters, even when you invite them, of childlike dependency. Oh, just tell me what to do. No, no. Psychological safety for adults means we come in on our own two feet as adults to a learning partnership. I believe good teachers want you to leave with more agency than you arrived with. That's the point, and that's the job. So I think to be horse first automatically requires us to be human first, and that requires better teaching. If the horse world wants better outcomes, we need better education, not louder methods and not more hierarchy, just better pedagogy, because horses don't benefit from people who feel incompetent. They benefit from people who feel and are literate, calm, and empowered. So here's a question I'd like to leave us all with, as per usual. Does your instructor make you feel or be more capable or more dependent? Because your learning matters. And so does the horse standing in the middle of all of it. And once again, guys, I'm not here to convince anyone. I'm here to steady the room, widen the view, and hopefully create space for people to choose differently. Because I believe horses notice that kind of person, and so do the people who are ready to notice as well. I really hope this helped someone out there who feels like they might be in a teaching dynamic that's not in their best interests. Have a great day, everyone, and thank you for listening. I'll see you next time. Bye.
That's it for today. If something in this episode stayed with you, take it with you into your next moment with your horse, because that's where this work will really come alive. If you would like to support this podcast, a simple way to do that is by leaving a rating or review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or Amazon. It will help more people to find these conversations, and it would mean a lot to me. Horse First with Lockie Phillips is distributed by the Believe Audio and Video Network. And just a gentle reminder, the content of this show is for informational and entertainment purposes only. The opinions expressed are those of the host and guests and are not a substitute for professional, veterinary, or medical advice. I'm Lockie Phillips. Thank you for being here.